gopis. This is chapter 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost unto Lord Narayan, the supermost human being. The personality of God, Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. In loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So this is chapter 22. Krishna steals the garments of the unmarried gopis. Here's the chapter summary. This chapter describes how the marriageable daughters of the cowherd men worshipped Katyayani to get Lord Sri Krishna as their husband, and how Krishna stole the garments of the young girls and gave the girls benedictions. During the month of Magashirsha, every day early in the morning, the young daughters of the cowherds would take one another's hands and, singing of Krishna's transcendental qualities, go to the Yamuna to bathe. Desiring to obtain Krishna as their husband, they would then worship the goddess Katyayani with incense, flowers, and other items. One day, the young gopis left their garments on the shore as usual and began playing in the water while chanting the Lord's activities. Suddenly, Krishna himself came there, took away all the garments, and climbed a nearby kadamba tree. Wanting to tease the gopis, Krishna said, "I understand how fatigued you gopis are from your austerities, so please come onto the shore and take back your clothes." The gopis then pretended to become angry and said the cold water of the Yamuna was giving them great pain. If Krishna did not give them back their garments, they said, they would inform King Kamsa of all that had happened. But if he did give the clothes back, then they would willingly carry out his orders in the mood of humble servants. Sri Krishna replied that he had no fear of King Kamsa, and that if the girls really intended to follow his command and be his maidservants, they should each immediately come onto the shore and take their respective garments. The girls, trembling from the cold, climbed out of the water with their two hands covering their private parts. Krishna, who felt great affection for them, again spoke. "Because while executing a vow, you bathed in the water naked, you have committed an offense against the demigods. And to counteract it, you should offer obeisances with joined palms. Then your vow of austerity will achieve its full result." The gopis followed this instruction and, folding their hands in respect, offered obeisances to Sri Krishna. Satisfied, he gave them back their clothing. But the young girls had become so attracted to him that they could not leave. Understanding their minds, Krishna said that he knew they had worshipped Katyayani to get him as their husband. Because they had offered their hearts to him, their desires would never again become tainted by the mood of materialistic enjoyment, just as fried barley corns can no longer grow into shoots. Next autumn, he told them, their most cherished desire would be fulfilled. Then the gopis, fully satisfied, returned to Vraj, and Sri Krishna and his cowherd friends went off to a distant place to graze the cows. Some time later, when the boys felt disturbed by the great heat of the summer, they took shelter at the base of the tree, of a tree that stood just like an umbrella. The Lord then said that the life of a tree is most excellent, for even while feeling pain, a tree continues to protect others from heat and rain and snow and so on. With its leaves, flowers, fruits, shade, roots and bark, wood, fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp and sprouts. That's pretty complete there, isn't it? A tree fulfills the desires of everyone. This kind of life is ideal. Indeed, said Sri Krishna, the perfection of life is to act with one's vital energy, wealth, intelligence, and words for the benefit of all. After the Lord had glorified the trees in this way, the entire company went to the Jamuna, where the cowherd boys let the cows drink the sweet water and also drank some themselves. So there you have the sneak preview of all that's to be coming up in the next few verses of when Krishna steals the garments of the gopis. Today we're doing text 1 to 3. We can chant text 1 responsively. Sri Suka Uvacha. Hemante Pratame Masi. Nanda Raja Kumarika. Cherur Havisham Bhujanaha. Katyayanyarchana Vratam. Sri Sugavacha. Hemante Pratame Masi. Nanda Raja Kumarika. Cherur Havishambhu Janaha. Katyayan Archana Vratam. Sri Sukhavacha. Hemante Pratame Masi. Nanda Raja Kumarika. Cherur Havishambhu Janaha. Katyayanyarchanavratam. Please chant in your own tune, whichever one you prefer, or whichever chord you like. Sri Sukhavacha. Cheru Habisham Bhujana. Nanda Raja Kumarika. Cherur Havisham Bhujana. Katyayanarchanam Vratam. Sri Sukha. Ladies, no, you. Sri Sukhavacha. Hey, Mante, Mante, Masi. Nanda Raja Kumarika. Shelo Habishambunjana Katyanyani Archana Vratam Shri Shuka Uvacha Emante Vatamimasi Nanda Vraja Kumarika Katyaya Nyachanam Vrata Shri Sukuvacha Shri Sukadev Goswami said Hemante during the winter Pratame in the first Masi month Nanda Raja of the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj Kumarikai the unmarried young girls. Cheru performed. Havisham, unseasoned Kitri. Bunjana, subsisting on. Katyayani, the goddess Katyayani. Archanavratam, the vow of worship. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, during the first month of the winter season, the young unmarried girls of Gokula observed a vow of worshipping goddess Katyayani. For the entire month, they ate only unspiced khichdi. Purport. The word Hemant refers to the month of Magashirsha. From approximately the middle of November to the middle of December, according to the Western calendar. In Volume 1, Chapter 22 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments that the gopis first ate havishayana, a kind of food prepared by boiling together mung dal and rice without any spices or turmeric. In my understanding, that means no salt either. According to the Vedic injunction, this kind of food is recommended to purify the body before one enacts a ritualistic ceremony. And also my understanding is that it's only once a day that you eat that. Once a day for a month. It's very blonde food. Okay, text 2 and 3. I'll just read it. If you want to read it, you can. If you want to chant it, you can. Aplutyam basi kalindya jalante chodite rune kritva prakritrim devim ananchur nripashaikatim gandhar malai shurabi bir bali bir drupadi pakai uvachais chopaharai pravala palatandulai. Apluta, bathing, Ambasi in the water, Kalindya of the Jamuna, Jalaante on the shore of the river, Cha and Udite was arising, Arune the dawn, Kritva making, Pratikritim a deity, Devim the goddess, Anarchu they worshipped, Nripa O King Parikshit, Shakatim made of earth, Shaikatim made of earth, Gandhai with sandalwood pulp and other fragrant articles, Malyai with garlands, Surabi B fragrant, Bali B with gifts, Dupa Dipakai with incense and lamps, Ucha Avachai opulent and also simple, Cha and Upaharai with presentations, Pravala newly grown leaves, Phala fruit, Tandulai and betel nuts. Translation. My dear king, after they had bathed in the water of the Jamuna, just as the sun was rising, the gopis made an earthen deity of the goddess Durga on the bank of the river. On the river bank. And they worshipped her with such aromatic substances as sandalwood pulp, along with other items both opulent and simple, including lamps, fruits, betel nuts, newly grown leaves, and fragrant garlands and incense. And the purport is, the word Bali Bihi is in this verse indicates offerings of clothing, ornaments, food, and so on. Om Agnate Mirandasya Janajana Savakaya Chaksur Umilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, as this 10th canto progresses, we are progressively seeing the deeper and deeper rasas, or relationships, that the inhabitants of Raj are expressing towards Krishna. Has been evident from the previous verses and previous chapters. The rainy season in autumn, when Srila Sukadeva Goswami, he starts to glorify the beauty of Vrindavan as a preparation for us to enter into these more intimate relationships that are being expressed, previous chapter and in this chapter, the more intimate relationships. And this is actually the whole systematic presentation of the Bhagavatam, as been mentioned in previous classes. The whole Bhagavatam is presented in such a systematic way to gradually bring one to understanding of these higher relationships and higher rasas. And it's been expressed right from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. I remember hearing, I think it was last week when Kalyapani Prabhu gave class, he was quoting from one of the first verses, or the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, how that's indicating these this meditation of higher relationships are there with the word Dhimahi. It's the Gayatri mantra there. And then also, even in the third verse, first chapter, Nigamagalpataror Galitam Palam Shukumukad Amrita Dravya Samutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Mahur Maho Rusika Bhuvi Bahukaha Masamenas, as they say. So rasa, that rasa that the sages are drinking there, that's being explained throughout Srimad Bhagavatam to explain the relationship. And all of that progressive understanding has been very carefully crafted for us throughout Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Sukadeva Goswami and, of course, by Srila Prabhupada, so that we'll come to the proper understanding of actually the goal in this life. The goal of life is to develop our consciousness to such an extent that only Krishna is there. Intense attachment for Krishna and nothing else is there in our lives. So that's from where we're at this position and condition of life, to the goal that we want to reach. That's a lofty goal to attain in one life. But as laid out for us and as explained, even yesterday class was so nice, as Seisha was saying, how all of that, all of those perfections of life can be had through the same process of hearing and chanting. Through the same process of hearing and chanting, so that our lives become, our consciousness becomes totally purified, and our lives become completely, and our whole, everything becomes totally absorbed in this mood of loving service to Krishna, in whichever ras it is, whether it's in neutrality, well, although Lord Chaitanya didn't like that neutrality ras too much, but dasya, or friendship, or parental, or in this case, madhurya ras, it's being expressed. So if we think of the context that this is being enacted, how in the take a look in the previous verse, how in the gopis, they're just discovering, this is the purva rag, this is before they've even met with Krishna, they're just discovering or developing or expressing, they're just beginning to express their attachment to Krishna. And they have had this attachment to Krishna ever since they first caught a glimpse of him in the village. And that's all their association has been up until this point. Just a little glimpse. Maybe when he was herding the cows, maybe when he was passing by. Just a little glimpse. But those glimpses are enough that they're completely 100% absorbed in loving attraction to that son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. So the interesting thing about the previous chapter, that the gopis, this was the first time that they were expressing to one another about their attachment. And they were seeing, oh, I'm not the only one that's attracted to Krishna. Everyone, all my friends, they're also attracted to Krishna, and they were all expressing it in different ways. So the acharyas have explained that primarily the gopis in the previous chapter were the married gopis. Even at a young age, they were married. According to the cultural system of the time, they were married at a young age, but still they were, and so they were, when they were together, they were expressing their attraction and attachment to Krishna. And in this chapter, it talks about how the unmarried girls, so they're very young. They're very young. If we remember, just a few days ago, Sunday, was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's disappearance day. That was so his life, 500 or so years ago, whatever. He was, in his time, he was explaining in his biography that he was married, I think, at 11. Was that 11? And his wife was 5. His wife was 5. And he said that it was just like a toy doll's getting married. That's, because there was no real relationship at that time. It was just so but the young girl, the purpose was that everybody's mind was peaceful. I have my wife, the girl has her husband, and she grows up very peaceful and thinking of him and doing small little services for him at such a young age that by the time she's getting mature, she's totally attached to her husband, totally attached, and it'll never break when it's cultivated in that way. So these girls are in, obviously, this is even much earlier, thousands of years ago, these girls were in that way. They were young girls, the whole culture was structured in such a way that it was totally natural for them to be married very soon, and or even the ones 6, 7, 8, 9, they were already married, they had their husbands living separately, whatever, visiting, doing some services, but totally attached and developing attachment, you could say, could be blossoming and growing to that person, their husband whom they were serving. Yet these girls were experiencing, even though they were in that situation, they were experiencing this attraction for Krishna. So it was when you try to see the circumstances, it's showing how Krishna is so all attractive that anybody would become attracted to his beauty. But also they had to transcend these social boundaries, even their social boundaries, which are so deep, that their whole culture, their whole system, their whole family system, that they had their husbands, but what were they doing? They're thinking of Krishna so intensely that as the stories will progress, that they give up everything when they hear their name. A little bit was explained yesterday about the sound of Krishna's flute. They heard their name they heard them being called by Krishna in the sound of his flute. They heard their name in their flute. They immediately dropped everything, all their religious dharma, all their social everything, anything that was there, everything they gave up for their attraction to Krishna, to go to somehow or other meet with him in the night. So that will come. These are, now we're just getting gradually instructed in, or explained about these things, and gradually developed to that point. So that's how Srimad Bhagavatam is bringing us to the highest level of understanding. again, even from the very conceptual verses of the Bhagavatam, even from the very beginning of Bhagavatam, that relationship with Krishna is there. And as you're familiar, verses in Sanskrit verses, they can be translated in various ways by the Sanskrit words can be translated in various ways. So a lot of these verses, they can have total different meanings for someone who's familiar and deeply familiar with Sanskrit. So just like in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Srila Rupa Goswami has placed, or Srila Prabhupada has placed in the introduction to Nectar Devotion is the first verse of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, wherein he talks about how Krishna attracts the different gopis, Tarika, Palika, Shama, and every etc. etc. So that verse is translated in one way, and then the acharyas have also can translate it in a second way that gives a whole nother, more rasika understanding of the intimate relationship between Krishna and the Graja Gopikas and the Vishakha constellation and Radha and so many things. So all of these verses, so even these verses, like I was saying, the beginning verses of the Bhagavatam, some of the acharyas, I was just glancing at Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on the first verses, the first three verses of the Bhagavatam. He has like five different translations of those verses, intensifying the different rasa relationship, how those verses to us mean, oh yeah, there's a water seen on land and the mirage is there and that's so many things, and we read it like that and we have to kind of think really hard, what does that mean even in English, what's the meaning of it? But he's going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and talking about Radha's relationship with Krishna and Krishna's relationship with Radha and so many things, which is like such a deeper level. So Srila Prabhupada very kindly has focused our attention on the proper understanding of these verses, on how to understand how everything is supremely related to the Lord. Nothing escapes their relationship to the Lord. Nothing, no one escapes it. There is nothing outside that exists, anything that exists from Chaturshloki, anything that you might think that exists outside of a relationship to the Lord, you should know it just to be an illusion. It's totally an illusion because everything has its relation to the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada has tirelessly endeavored to focus our mind on the proper understanding of how everyone has their intimate relationship with the Lord. The Lord's the supreme controller over everyone, the supreme proprietor of everyone, and things aren't necessarily what they might appear in this material world. What might appear to be real in the material world, lasting, has really no real substance. But it's a what? Reflection. It's a reflection of the reality that's there in the spiritual world. So the gopis here, the young girls, in Saratha Darshini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that particularly Dhanishta, the gopis such as Dhanishta headed up the unmarried girls who were in the colder month, the Hemant season, as has been mentioned before. There's six seasons, the six seasons in India. We have got your four regular spring, summer, winter, and fall, but they have an extra couple of seasons, the monsoon season, the rainy season, and this season here, Hemant season, it's a season before the really cold part. This is just beginning of the winter season here. It's like a dewy season. And so when the days get a little shorter, the nights get a little longer, and it's a little more cold. So they're eating, during that time, they're taking a vow to subsist only on Havishan, which is that simple unspiced, unsalted, once a day, khichdi thing. When the girls first approached their parents to do this vow, their parents weren't particularly excited about it. They said, this isn't too austere for you. You can't just do this. You're young, growing girls. You can't just eat this khichdi once a day and perform these austerities. And they said, no, we can do it. We can do it. And so it's explained that they're worshiping the goddess Katyayini. Interesting how they're worshiping the goddess Katyayini, also known as Durga, and this worship is not cited as condemned by the Lord or by Srila Prabhupada. Because why? Their intention is by worshiping Katyayini, their intention is to please Krishna. Whereas in two more chapters, next chapter is the wives, the Brahmins' wives. And then after that, we're rolling into the Govardhan Leela. So in that chapter, when the cowherd men and Nanda Maharaj and the members of Nanda's village wanted to worship Indra, that worship was condemned by the Lord. He wanted to divert their attention because they weren't doing that one. They weren't seeing that one in relation to the Supreme Lord. They were seeing that Indra, they were indebted to Indra, and therefore he wanted to straighten that misconception out. Also to note in that verse that we chanted before class, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning. So that offering of respects, as it's mentioned in the scriptures, the demigods should be respected in their proper relation to the Supreme Lord. So Mother Saraswati, offering of respects to Saraswati, we were just reading in 7th, 8th chapter of Nectar of Devotion, we were just reading how the demigods should never be disrespected. Of course, one doesn't need to worship them separately, but they're not to be disrespected either. So again, Srila Prabhupada is giving us the proper attitude of how to place our mind solely and wholly on complete dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything done in proper, with proper intention, in proper perspective, that's to be cultivated through the process of devotional service. So is that some thoughts on that? If there's any comments or clarifications or discussions or corrections? Shri Ram Prabhu?
I read somewhere, I don't remember where, that...
I have that same problem.
Krishna had his associates with him too. And the boys, his friends, they were like 3 years old.
3 years old, so, 2 and 3 years
so
old,
Krishna
very
was,
young.
Krishna was pretty young also. And of course, these girls, they were pretty young.
Yes, Krishna was young, but he wasn't that young. Krishna
was
7. Yeah, but he took those boys because they didn't care anything about naked girls or not.
Yeah.
They didn't see any difference, and neither would the girls feel uncomfortable with those little toddlers,
yeah,
you could say.
The whole past sense seems, in a sense, very childish also, for seeing like that. But unfortunately, unscrupulous people, they sometimes misinterpret it.
Yes.
You know,
totally.
Very seriously. You know.
Totally.
Yeah, past sense like these. Is that, you know, because of this, sometimes they don't want to accept Krishna as the Supreme and so forth.
And also sometimes they don't know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality or what it means to be, you know, I mean, they might have a conception, a limited conception of what God is, but through the Bhagavatam and the Acharyas are concerned. And how is it that they're misconstruing it is because they can't see the difference between iron and gold. So that's, you know, explained in the scriptures that the lust of the normal conditioned soul is compared to iron. But iron, that lust is nothing, iron is nothing compared to the gold, that pure, unalloyed, unmixed, loving relationship that the Lord has with all his servitors. And these gopis, Thanks for reminding me of all the things that I really wanted to say, but somehow I never remember them. It was like that, so the gopis, there's like three ways that one can reach perfection in the process of devotional service. It's explained in Nectar of Devotion. Through sadhana, the process of sadhana, through kripa siddhi, by mercy, and nitya siddha. They can be eternal. So the gopis, this had come up in a couple of, some time back, that there's different categories of gopis that are partaking in these pastimes. Some of them are nitya siddhas. Some of them are nitya siddha parishad, the eternal servants, the eternal associates of the Lord, who descend along with the Lord to participate in his pastimes, perfected perfected human beings. Some of them have reached that position through the process of sadhana, by executing the process of vaidhi sadhana, progressing through raganuga sadhana, and then they're reached perfection, and the process is that then in their next life, then they associate, they come and associate with the Lord wherever his pastimes are being performed. And an example of that is the Rishichari gopis. The Rishichari gopis in their previous lives were sages from the Dandakaranya forest. When Lord Ram entered the forest, they had been executing a process of devotional service and austerities, and when the Lord Ramachandra came into the forest, they were so attracted to them that immediately blossomed their conjugal mood. And Lord Ram said, not that we, obviously it can't be done in this life, but in my next time I come, just wait for the next time that I come, and then we'll have it. So some people, through the process of sadhana, then they are born in Vrindavan or wherever the Lord's pastimes are being performed, and they're trained up with the nitya siddha gopis. They're trained up how to execute. Practice. Then it's, you know, real attachment is there, and they're developing that attachment and seeing how to develop it. And some people are elevated to that position by mercy. But Srila Prabhupada explains in Nectar of Devotion, Kripa Siddha, that's very rare. That mercy, that to bring one to that perfection that quickly, it's possible. Just as it's possible to get an honorary degree in the college, it's possible. Someone who didn't go, Prabhupada, when he speaks of honorary degree, often he gives the example of Rabindranath Tagore, who was a great poet, I think Bengali, don't know, who never went to school. But he wrote such beautiful poetry that he was recognized even by Oxford University and given an honorary degree by Oxford University. So it is possible to get an honorary degree for never having gone to school or achieved, you know, through the process. But usually the process is, you know, you go through all the levels of school, you graduate, you get your degree. That's the way. So all of these people are, all of these gopis, all of these associates, they are in different levels. So Krishna, in one place in 10th canto, in the comments of the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's saying that the Lord, he puts his associates in the fire. Just as one who wants to purify gold puts them in the fire. And even though gold is pure, in that fire, any small traces of impurities are burnt off. So any small traces of impurities that might be there, material conceptions that might be there, and we can see what's being burnt off are such subtle conceptions, you know, such subtle layers that are being burnt off. We're, in this stage, dealing with such gross misconceptions, and they have such finer things that gradually, I see a question forming over there, that they're purified of that until complete 100% unalloyed love for Krishna is developed. Yes, dear Sukhada?
So my question is, when you talk about the eternally
liberated
and eternally conditioned, so are there some beings that are created as being eternally liberated, Or is everyone, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. A very high level.
It doesn't seem
level.
Fair if some people...
Krishna, Sukhita, is putting her complaint into the process of creation. Why she wasn't created, eternally liberated. It's registered. He's registered your complaint, and he said he's going to change it from now on. These are questions. One thing about asking questions, you have to ask your questions to the persons who are qualified to answer them. So you just asked a question to a person who's not qualified to answer and who doesn't really know the answer. But I have heard, I can give you some small snippet of a textbook answer, that the living entities that come, that are the living entities that are eternally liberated come through Baladev. It's a question you have to ask those guys that sit in the back of the room there and give their purports. Sorry. So, as far as I understand, yeah, there are different categories of people created, yes. Not often spoken about. Lakshmi Moni, save me. No, why are you saying such a thing?
I don't know if I can save you, because I can't save myself. But I was just thinking that aren't we all created to be eternally in the spiritual world, and then some of us develop some kind of inclination to be God or enjoy separately from Krishna, and then we come back into what is considered to be Nitya Bhada, but isn't really Nitya, it just appears to be Nitya because it seems like such a long time that we're in the material world, but really it's just a flash in time, and then we go back to the spiritual world and we don't have to come back again.
That's the explanation that I've heard many a times.
Because that's what I...
But I've also heard other explanations from bona fide personalities, so howdy go. So here's what I can say. Here's one thing I can say. It's like it's levels. Here's my understanding. It's levels of understanding that are revealed gradually. And our understanding matures over time, and the fog lifts and we understand things in different lights through the acharyas. Like I was saying, some of the verses can be explained in so many different ways. I don't understand them in that way, but gradually, if ever and whenever the fog will lift from my consciousness, we'll understand it in different ways. Sukhita?
Oh, I was going to say, I thought I'd read that there are some entities. That's what my question was, is everyone created equal? Or, because I think like there's certain entities, like, you know.
Enemies? Is that what? Entities? Okay.
Entities.
Entities.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like Mother Yashoda, et cetera, you know what I mean? That are eternally liberated. But
Understand. So it's beyond me, you know. So, and Keshava Prabhu?
I was just going to say, I don't know if, like Mother Yashoda and others, it seems like they qualified themselves. It wasn't like they were created like that. I mean, like, we're all created, and I thought for a moment her question was whether there are new creations, like, you're already so many billions of living entities, so many in the spiritual world, so many here. I was just thinking that, Mother Yashoda, they were, they had previous lifetimes, where they were performing austerities, and then they wanted Krishna to be their son, and that's how they qualified themselves to be.
Yes? Can I just say one thing before you start? It's just churning the ocean of our understanding. I have heard other levels of explanations of that, but I can't repeat it in a coherent way. So what you're saying, like in the Bhagavatam, when Parikit Maharaj asks Sukadev Goswami, he's talking about the good fortune of he's comparing Vasudev and Devaki to Nanda and Yasoda. He's wondering how they got that good fortune. So in there, when you read the explanation, some of the explanations of the Acharyas, they say deeper and deeper things. They say what you just said to a certain degree, and even with more clarity. Here comes Pushkar. Maybe that's why he's coming now. But there's other, understands Trivikram Prabhu?
Yeah. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada explaining Nityabhada Nitasiddha, mm-hmm. said that the Nitasiddhas are in a special category, and they never become affected by the material energies. And so, in other words, they never fall down.
Right.
They're always liberated.
Right.
But that's a different category of...
That's my understanding.
Living entities. And then, of course, in Nitabhada, they fall and rise like that. I don't know if Pushkar wants to say something.
Zip for now. He'll say it after class.
Well, here's an easier one.
Okay.
It is described that Shukadeva Goswami, when he was walking along the bank, that the girls were bathing, that they didn't cover themselves. And when Vyasadeva came, then they covered themselves. And here we see the girls, they were so young, but still they were conscious of their private parts, so they covered over. Even it was Krishna. So, back to you.
It was a different Ras. It was a different Ras. Sukadev Goswami was just passing by. He wasn't having anything to do with those ladies that were bathing in the river. He wasn't paying any attention to them. He was just passing by. They had no attraction to him. He had no attraction to them. So it was a different thing. They were performing this Katyayani Vrat just to get Krishna as their husband, and there he was, stealing their clothes. And of course, the story, all of those things will be developed as the verses go on. How he's taking, why he's taking them, everyone asks. Why did he steal the gopis' garments? Because the gopis are praying for them to him to be their husband. So he steals their clothes because a woman is never naked in front of anyone except her husband. So he's reciprocating with them all at once, in that particular way, and then he'll say, and your desires will be fulfilled when the fall season, next year in the fall season. So it's a different Ras than a stranger walking by, who Sukadev was in relation to the ladies that were happening. Oh, I'm getting out of here. Okay? Sorry. Just keep it tuned in, and all your questions will be answered as the verses go on. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhakti Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. See, the claps come from the girl's side. They're very encouraging. Thank you, ladies. Hare Krishna.